This is Movies for the Blind, episode 150, The Secret of Dr. Kildare, part 2 of 3.
What did you want to study medicine for? You'd have made a swell pawnbroker.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We're continuing with The Secret of Dr. Kildare, starring a member of one of the great acting families, the Barrymores. Our Dr. Gillespie is Lionel Barrymore, brother to Ethel and John, and great-uncle to Drew. He would become best known as mean old Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life. But when I was working on this movie earlier, his distinctive voice reminded me of something else. I thought he sounded like Simon Bar Sinister, the villain in the Underdog cartoons. So I looked it up, and indeed, though he had passed away by that point, Lionel Barrymore was the inspiration for the voice of Underdog's nemesis. Dr. Gillespie can be a nemesis to some, like Dr. Carew, who runs Blair General Hospital. But we all know he's a good guy, a medical legend dealing with his own bad health while mentoring young Dr. Kildare, and about to embark on a major study of a pneumonia drug. He's also enlisted Jimmy Kildare to help the very rich Mr. Messenger figure out the reasons for his daughter's strange behavior. So Jimmy has gone undercover as a regular guy to befriend Nancy, and it's working. But now, it's back to the hospital for part two of The Secret of Dr. Kildare. Later in the hospital lab...
What did you find out about Miss Messenger?
Only that she's a very complicated case, maybe weeks before we get the answer.
I told you that yesterday without even seeing her. I don't suppose you found time this morning to read the weather reports.
No, sir.
Well, that cold polar wave we've been waiting for has reached Canada. And in its wake will come pneumonia. Thousands of cases. You're going to fly north tonight to meet it. And then you'll check all the cases wherever you happen to find them. And then you'll hop in a plane and bring me back the blood cultures. While I'll be camping right here day and night doing the laboratory work. And then, Jimmy, maybe in a couple of months we'll find out why that 7% still dies.
Gillespie rests his head in his hand.
Pardon me, sir. Don't you think we ought to rest a few days before we go on?
Rest? Ah, what do we want with rest? Nurse! Parker! Come in here. Pneumonia. It strikes so quick, and we work so slow. Why, we ought to be ashamed of ourselves. This is the 20th century. We ought to be able to cure anything. And yet we let this white death, this invisible killer, run riot as though we were still living in the Dark Ages.
He slumps forward. Jimmy sits him up as Parker arrives and helps him.
Get me a hypo of adrenaline, quick.
She hurries off. Keeping Gillespie straight, he backs up his wheelchair, then pushes it forward out of the lab and into his exam room. As he stops, Molly enters.
Well, Gillespie, I have a bone to pick with you, and you stay, you're in this. Well, what happened? Tell me, quick.
Fainted.
She turns to Parker with the syringe.
Get outside there. I accept nothing has happened.
She does.
Give me that adrenaline.
Adrenaline, yes.
She gives him the syringe and gets a vial.
No, you can't burn the candle at both ends.
Jimmy gives him the shot.
He'll bounce back quick after this. It's just exhaustion, that's all.
That's not all. And if you don't know what I mean, it's time you did.
You know, too.
Oh, I know everything about him. When you were running around in diapers, I was watching over him. Listening to him recommend 8 hours of sleep for everyone else and get along with two himself. His legs were good once, but they wore out trying to keep out with his willpower. He had resistance, but he loaned it to his patients and never got it back.
Now his time is getting short.
He takes the vial.
I didn't think he'd want anyone else to know.
Well, the first day I came here, he asked me about a discoloration on his finger. Kept hounding me until I said it was a melanoma and it meant cancer.
And why didn't you keep him from starting this sulfapyridine business?
Me tell him what not to do?
Gillespie rouses with the open vial of smelling salts.
What's going on here?
He feels his arm.
You gave me a hypo, didn't you?
Yes, sir. Adrenaline.
Good enough. Well, what are you fussing around me for?
Well, I came in here looking for trouble. And I found it got here ahead of me.
You go on back to your nurses.
Not till you quit talking and go to bed.
Oh, so you're a doctor now, huh? When did you start practicing? Kildare, call Dr. Carew, will you?
Carew?
Sure, he's the best doctor in this bowling alley. That's the reason he's head man.
Jimmy steps away.
He'll have me skipping rope in 5 minutes.
On the phone.
Dr. Carew, this is Kildare. Dr. Gillespie has just had a slight collapse. He wants you immediately.
Collapse? I didn't have any collapse. I got the constitution of a horse. I just get tired once in a while. Well, even a horse gets tired.
I'm going to send your patients home.
Come back here.
I'm going to send them home. When I see you skipping rope, I'm going to run around town with a basket and collect them again.
She opens the waiting room door.
Dr. Gillespie will see no one today. Everybody can be notified about new appointments.
Yes, Miss Bird.
She closes the door.
25 years ago, I took you out to dinner. I might have known that sooner or later you'd take advantage of it.
And you shut up, or I'll tell Dr. Kildare how you tried to put your arm around me in the lunch wagon.
Carew steps in.
Leonard, I'm so sorry.
Now, look, I've got a couple of mourners here already. What I need is a doctor.
You? Listen to a doctor? Don't make me laugh.
Well, I sent for you, didn't I? Now, listen. I passed out. Kildare injected adrenaline. I came too. Pulse 78, general feeling of lassitude. Now, take it up from there and stick to medicine, if you still remember any.
Cancel Dr. Gillespie's appointments for the rest of the day.
Already canceled.
Get his bed ready and bring me 3 grains of sodium amytal.
Yes, Doctor.
I don't need any dope. I can sleep without it.
But you won't.
I give you my word of honor.
I don't believe you.
Are you doubting my word?
I certainly am. Wait a minute. This nevitine. Do just as will. Now,
he gives him tablets.
You take those and don't argue.
Yes, Doctor.
Gillespie puts them in his mouth. Jimmy holds out a glass of water, which he accepts and sips.
Now go to bed.
Molly returns.
You're too late, Miss Efficiency. Our corner druggist here gave me something just as good.
Well, that's fine. Then off to bed you go.
Take your hand off my chair. Conover! Now get out of here, you meddling female, and never dare to show your nose in my office again. You're fired.
I am not. I don't work for you. I work for the hospital, thank goodness.
Well, then what are you doing in my office?
Conover arrives.
Get into bed, Conover.
Conover, don't you pay any attention to
us. No, sir, I won't.
He pushes the chair.
Disloyal, miserable, double-crossing.
Yes, sir, that's what I am, but you's going to bed.
Jimmy and Carew watch Conover wheel Gillespie into his quarters, with Molly following.
Well, I better get my own work cleared up, just in case. By the way, Kildare, Mr. Messenger rang me up this morning. From his daughter's mood, he feels sure that, with a little time, you might gain her complete confidence.
Dr. Carew,
I understand. Naturally, you don't want to think about anything else at a moment like this. Of course, I don't have to tell you that any hospital is like a family of children, always out of the elbow, with winter coming on, no coal in the cellar. And Mr. Messenger's a very rich man.
Dr. Carew...
You're perfectly right. Forget about it tonight. We'll talk about it later.
Carew leaves. The door to Gillespie's quarters is opened.
Kildare.
By Gillespie.
The old fuss budget gone.
But yes, but Dr. Gillespie...
Hey, do you know something?
He wheels back in.
Patients will hold a pill in their mouth until after you've gone and then spit it out, the way I did.
You promised Dr. Carew that you'd go to sleep.
Oh, forget it. He broke a promise he made me back in 1921.
Now, Dr. Gillespie, you and I both know that there's one particular reason, one inescapable reason why you must conserve your strength.
He sets aside some files.
You didn't tell Carew, did you?
Oh, no.
No, I knew you hadn't. I know you won't. Jimmy Kildare, out there, pneumonia starting on the rampage. Tonight you're going to hop a plane.
Parker enters.
Well, Nosey, what do you want now?
Dr. Gillespie, are you all right?
A full report of my mental and physical condition will be made out for the files. I'll see that you get a copy.
Yes, Doctor. Dr. Kildare, your mother and father are downstairs in the reception room.
Oh, my mother and father here?
Yes, Doctor.
She leaves.
Well, isn't that nice? Give them my best regard. Be back at 3 o'clock, Jimmy. We'll need a good, solid 6 hours together if you're going to go out tonight.
Jimmy starts to go.
Oh, Jimmy,
You needn't bother telling your mother about the flying. I wrote to her all about it last week.
Oh, I wrote to her, too. She says yours is a very remarkable letter.
She did, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no trick to writing a good letter.
Jimmy pulls one from his uniform.
She even sent me the letter she got from you.
He reads.
Enclosed fine coupon and $3. Please send me one pair of your loaded dice in a plain wrapper. Very truly yours, Leonard B. Gillespie.
Jimmy hands it to him.
I must have put this letter in the wrong envelope.
Looking at him, Jimmy goes to the side door and leaves for the reception room.
Oh!
Mother!
He hugs her.
Hello, Dad.
And shakes his hand.
Oh, fine. Gee, this is a treat. I knew I needed something. Now I know what it was.
Let me get a good look at you. I brought your heavy overcoat, your winter underwear, and a chocolate cake.
Don't let her kid you, son. The cake is for herself.
Oh, don't tell me I know. I sent her a wire this morning. Happy birthday, Mother.
He kisses her cheek.
Well, what are you two doing in New York, anyway?
Well, this trip's to see the fair, and you, it's my birthday present from Father.
And we wouldn't have been able to make it if Jerry Corbin hadn't sold his farm and paid for that baby he had in 1927.
Well, what about his ulcers? Did he ever pay for those?
Don't start that again, Jimmy. That's all I heard on the way down here.
I made Father buy a new suit, too, so he's getting stout.
Where do we celebrate?
How about Mike Sullivan's Cafe? Swell food right across the street.
Soon after, the sign outside Sullivan's Hospital Cafe says, "The doctors eat here. It must be good." At a table inside, Mrs. Kildare blows out a candle on her cake.
Mrs. Kildare, the first time I saw your son, I knew his mother'd be a fine-looking woman.
Well, she's the prettiest one I could find, Mike. That's why I married her.
Why not? A man goes into a store to buy a shirt. He picks the best-looking one. When he wants a wife, what should he do? Shut his eyes?
Mike shakes his head.
You better be careful, Mike. Much more talk like that and you'll spoil it.
Well, that's the way it should be. Say your prayers, pay your bills, be good to your mother, and you can walk up to anybody in the world and spit in his eye.
Hey, Mike.
Coming. I'll take this over to the bar and eat it there. Thank you.
He walks off with a slice of cake.
Well, I promised Jim Galt I'd buy him a sun lamp. He wants to try it for his arthritis.
Jimmy stands with his dad.
I'll see you back at the hotel at 3 o'clock.
He kisses her cheek.
Bye, son.
Bye, Steve.
Goodbye, Mike.
Goodbye, sir. Drop in tomorrow for lunch. It's Friday. We have 3 elegant kinds of fish. And we also have roast beef in case you bring a heathen with you.
Goodbye.
Mr. Kildare leaves, and Jimmy sits back down.
That's funny. I was just going to invent an excuse to get rid of your father.
Why?
So you could tell me your troubles.
There's no use of father and me to try to keep anything from you, is there?
No. I know the minute your father enters the house if he's worried, by the way he hangs up his hat. He's worried about something now, too.
How can you tell? Mind reading?
No. Just love and understanding. Now tell me your problem, if you want to.
All right. I have to keep someone from doing something. There just isn't any way to do it.
You mean you haven't seen the way yet? Nothing's impossible, son, unless you stop trying.
But this is different. Because what this person wants to do is something that should be done. It's for the good of the whole world.
There's very few men left like that now. Why do you want to stop him?
Because if he keeps on, it'll kill him.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be much help to you. I've never had to decide big things. With you or your father, I've always been able to manage by talking a little plain, good horse sense. Except the one time I did tell him a lie. He'd been working in the garden too much. And I knew it was bad for his rheumatism, but nothing could stop him. So I hid his tools and told him a tramp stole them. That stopped him.
Well, Mother, I... Hey, wait a minute. You took away his tools?
Yes.
Well, I think you've shown me just what to do. How about right?
That isn't a big problem. I've always taught you right from wrong by the power of prayer. And the back of the hairbrush.
But if I do what I think I should, I'm going to look like a snake in the grass.
Jimmy, it's Dr. Gillespie you've been talking about, isn't it?
Well, Yes, he's in bad shape. On this particular job he's doing, I'm pretty sure he can't go ahead without me.
I see. And if you quit him, he'll have to take a rest. But son, wouldn't it almost break your heart to leave him?
Well, it means the finish of all I've hoped and dreamed.
God bless you.
She puts a hand on his.
Don't feel too badly, son. You may be the only one that knows you're doing the right thing. It's an awfully nice feeling.
Guess it doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks.
He kisses her cheek. While in Gillespie's quarters...
If I were you, I wouldn't read anymore.
Gillespie's in bed.
If I were you, I'd keep my mouth shut.
Leonard, please.
He drops the book on his lap.
Well, maybe I don't feel so good.
Your nurse will be here in a minute.
Nurse?
Molly picks up the book.
Now look here, Molly Bird. I won't have any of your frozen-faced, mealy-mouthed nurses around me. Who'd you get?
Mary Lamont. And there's no use trying to soft soap her because I've told her exactly what to do.
We'll see about that.
Mary arrives.
Hello, honey. I had a heck of a time getting you assigned to me. Miss Bird here wanted to send in one of her favorites. But I told her unless I had that very beautiful Mary Lamont, I wouldn't play. Didn't I?
You did not. And don't forget Lamont. In his office, he may be a doctor, but here he's a patient.
Molly steps to his side.
Leonard, please take care of yourself.
Goodbye.
Molly leaves with a nod to Mary.
I'd like a cigarette, please.
Stepping to the foot of the bed, she looks at his chart.
Never mind that chart. Give me a cigarette.
No cigarettes.
Are you going to mind me or that fool piece of paper?
No cigarettes.
Now, look here, Mary. You're a very nice girl, and I like you. I'm going to give you a little advice. The great secret to being a successful nurse is to obey the rules, but at the same time, keep the patient happy.
My book only says, obey the rules, period.
What do you want to know about me? I'll tell you.
It's time for your dinner. Let's see.
Now you're talking. Order me a small steak, some mashed potatoes, and a piece of apple pie and some cheese and a cup of coffee.
She sets down the chart and picks up a phone.
Hello. I'm ordering Dr. Gillespie's dinner. Please send up a small cup of gruel, some junket, weak tea, no cream or sugar. Thank you.
Oh, that's fine. And after dinner, you might order me a postage stamp. I'd like to do a little reading.
At his bedside, she pulls out a thermometer.
What do you expect to do with that thing?
I'm going to take your temperature.
Any temperatures taken around here, I'll take them.
Mary smiles.
What are you laughing at?
Something you said last week. There's no patient in the world as ornery as a sick doctor.
She puts the thermometer in his mouth.
And if there's going to be any talking done around here, I'll do it myself.
Well, I'm not interested. What about?
Jimmy Kildare.
She starts writing on his chart.
I might have expected that.
He takes the thermometer out.
98. Write it down.
She writes.
So what are you writing there?
Temperature uncertain. Patient stubborn, bad-tempered, and childish.
He puts it back in.
What about Jimmy Kildare?
Well, you should have heard him talk this morning. He was spending a multimillionaire's money last night. A steak sandwich, $2. And what does Jimmy think? Boom. There goes a couple of shirts. $5 to the waiter. Bang. A new pair of shoes. Will the orchestra leader please play Boop Boop A Doop for Miss Nancy Messenger? Give him $20, Jimmy.
Wham! Shoot a clothes.
With an extra pair of pants.
She checks her watch.
Throwing all that money around last night and next morning coming back to $20 a month. After all, everybody's human.
Not everybody.
You're right. You're not.
She takes out the thermometer.
Treat Jimmy. I mean Dr. Kildare. Taking away his evenings off and working him 18 hours a day.
Well, I work 18 hours a day.
As Mary writes on the chart, Gillespie starts to doze off, and she notices.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Gillespie.
She puts his hands under his sheets.
I shouldn't be talking to you like this.
She carefully pulls the sheets up around him.
You're not feeling very well.
Later, in Jimmy's parents' hotel room.
Hello, Mother.
Hello. Did you get the sun lamp?
No. They didn't have exactly what I wanted. Jimmy looks fine, doesn't he?
Yes. I've never seen him look any better. Stephen, when you suggested coming down here, I thought there was something the matter with Jimmy or that he was in some kind of trouble.
that you two were keeping it from me. You know, don't tell Mother. She might worry.
Nothing like that at all.
I know that now.
Well, do you feel better?
No, because now I know it's you.
Me?
You've been unhappy for days. If it isn't Jimmy, it must be you. Why don't you tell me? You're going to in the end anyway.
Pulling out an envelope from his jacket, he sits on the bed and hands it to her.
From Dr. Jack Carboy.
She takes out a letter.
Just the last paragraph. The rest is all technical.
I think it's coronary disease. And dear Steve, it's a very unpleasant duty to tell you, but I think you may live 10 seconds.
She sits.
Or 10 years. Come and see me and we'll talk over the details. He says 10 seconds.
Or maybe 10 years.
Oh, Steve.
Now, Mother, I'm going to see another doctor. That's why we came to New York. But we mustn't tell Jimmy. Martha.
He takes her hand.
We've been married a long, long time. And every day has been a happy one. I had hoped that it might go on for 20 years more.
She stands.
You're not going to be foolish enough to tell me that you don't mind dying.
Then steps to a window.
So that we can think of some philosophy that will make it easier for either of us.
No, dear. I just wanted to say that medicine might not do any good, but we know that tears won't. But there is one thing left. The same help and comfort we got the night that Jimmy had typhoid fever. And we waited, not knowing. You remember?
I remember.
He marks the sparrow's fall.
Stephen, I'm going to take you to every heart specialist that's listed in the New York telephone book. I know he marks the sparrow's fall.
She sits beside him.
But I remember, too, that the Lord helps those who help themselves.
Later, Gillespie's chart has his diagnosis listed as cardiac disease. It's being read by Carew as he has breakfast at his desk. He answers his intercom.
Yes?
Dr. Kildare to see you.
Send him in.
Carew stands and slips on his jacket as Jimmy enters.
Good morning, Kildare.
Good morning, sir. Dr. Carew, what have you done about the messenger case?
Nothing, Joe.
I'd like to take it.
You would?
Yes, sir. I think it's too big an opportunity to miss.
Oh, but does Dr. Gillespie know?
No, not yet.
Well, I'd hesitate to take you away from him without his knowledge and permission.
Dr. Carew, I've made up my mind. If necessary, I'll hand in my resignation.
Oh, no.
He presses the intercom.
Yes, Dr. Carew.
I'm assigning Dr. Kildare in the messenger case. Make out an order and I'll sign it.
Oh, Dr. Carew, please, I'd rather tell Dr. Gillespie myself than have him learn it through an official order.
Oh, yes, of course.
Don't
put through that order about Dr. Kildare until I let you know. Well, this is all very fortuitous. Solving the messenger case will be a priceless asset to you when you're ready to go out into private practice, and, of course, it won't do the hospital any harm.
I've taken that all into consideration. What's the latest report on Dr. Gillespie?
There it is.
He picks it up.
Haven't you seen him?
No, Nurse Molly Bird asked me not to go in.
We're not very happy about his condition.
I can see that.
Gillespie bursts in with Mary pushing him.
Wait outside, Mary. I don't want you to hear what I got to say to the head of your hospital.
She leaves, closing the doors.
What's this I hear about you taking Kildare away from me and putting him on the messenger case?
Why, who told you?
Oh, I knew about it before the echo of your voice giving the order died away. What have you been saying to my boy? I've told you 10,000 times to run your hospital and let my office alone.
There wasn't anything he said, sir. I made up my own mind.
Now, that's absolutely true, Leonard.
Get out of here.
Carew leaves them alone.
Are you crazy? You know I can't go along with our work alone.
I'm sorry, sir.
He steps past him to the doors.
Jimmy.
He grabs his arm.
You're tired. Take the day off. Go out and get some relaxation. You'll feel differently about it tomorrow.
No. Messenger's too big a chance to give up. I don't see any reason why I should go on working 24 hours a day on something that won't pay me a cent when when I can get in with one of the richest men in New York.
Gillespie looks away, crestfallen. Jimmy goes to the doors and opens them.
So, Dr. Kildare, Mr. Messenger waves a checkbook in your face and you drop me like a hot potato. I've waited 20 years for an assistant and I find I've picked a common little money grubber. What did you want to study medicine for? You'd have made a swell pawnbroker.
Jimmy walks on past Mary and Carew.
Mary.
She turns to him.
Take me back, will you?
She steps behind his wheelchair.
I'm tired.
And pushes him out of Carew's office. Later, he's back in bed as Conover packs and Parker walks in.
Here's your fishing rod, Doctor.
Fishing rod? Where'd I get a fishing rod?
Remember that fella that we killed? The one that had the misery in his back? He gave us this.
Molly arrives with a basket.
Grinning about.
Well, I'm glad you have to go away. I mean, I'm glad you're sick enough to be well enough to go. I mean, if you're getting some sleep, it'll give you some. Well, this is a fish basket. Take it with you.
That isn't mine.
Oh, yes, it is. I meant to give it you for a Christmas present last year, but I forgot all about it.
Molly, you're lying.
You can't prove it.
Mary walks in with a thermos.
This is nice to keep hot coffee in.
Where did that come from?
It had the hospital's name on it, but I scratched it off.
She gives it to Conover.
Well, under those circumstances, I'll take it.
Well, for years I've known you've had stooges reporting to you, but this is the first I've heard you have them stealing for you.
Miss Lamont, write this into your report. My patient was feeling fine until 15 or 20 chattering females descended on him. And goodbye, quick.
I guess I can take a hint.
Molly goes to the door.
I'll see you before you leave tonight, Leonard.
I'll be at the train, Doctor.
Should I go help Dr. Kildare pack his things, sir?
Conover.
Mary looks at Gillespie, who turns away.
No.
Molly and Parker lead Conover out.
The idea, after all you've done for him. Leaving you for a hypochondriac debutante with blonde hair and lots of money.
Another county heard from.
What do you mean?
I forgot about the time we were worried about Jimmy and a redhead. You've been in love with him ever since.
That's not true.
Oh, let's stop kidding ourselves. We're both sunk.
Mary frowns. Well, at the Messengers.
So that's the reason as soon as I got to New York, I telephoned your father.
You're lunching with him, aren't you?
Yeah. I'll see you later.
Of course, we have a date for a walk, haven't we?
Right.
Dad, if Jimmy's late, you charge it to my account.
I will not. I'll take it out of your allowance. Come in, Jimmy.
He approaches Messenger as Nancy leaves.
Sit down.
Later.
I know nothing definite yet. Human behavior, especially unexpected behavior, is very often the outcome of some fixation in childhood.
What are you driving at?
Well, some instinct, and I can't rationalize it, keeps bringing me back to Nancy's mother. Don't you know anything?
Over 12 years ago. There was never any divorce. Mrs. Messenger and I had separated for several years.
You have no direct information of your wife and daughter during those years?
No, I was in Europe.
Mrs. Messenger died of pneumonia, hmm?
Yes, she'd been ill for some time with a complication of ailments. But the end came through pneumonia.
Where?
At our Long Island place, out near Eastbury. You understand that at the time I got back to this country, it was all over. The funeral, everything. I haven't been to Eastbury since.
Does Nancy ever visit the Long Island home?
I imagine so. You see, Mrs. Messenger requested that Nancy's nurse should occupy it as long as she lived.
Nancy's nurse?
There's a woman named Nora.
I'd like to talk to this Nora.
That could be easily managed. I'll telephone.
No, let me see if I can't arrange to meet Nora without anyone, even Nancy, suspecting anything.
Later, Nancy drives a convertible.
Isn't this much nicer than a walk in the park?
Oh, of course. But you certainly changed your mind fast.
Oh, it wasn't really a whim. When I got out of my shower, there was a phone message calling me to Long Island. So here we are.
She pulls up to a house behind a picket fence with a man nearby. Jimmy and Nancy get out.
There's the house.
They walk through the gate as a woman steps out of the house.
Nora!
My little lamb!
They hug, and Nora kisses her cheek.
Nora, this is Mr. Kildare. Pleased to meet you, sir.
How do you do?
Well, come in.
They enter the house.
Well, now let me take your things. Oh, my. This is the nicest surprise I've had since the last time you came.
Surprise, Nora? Why, it was your message that brought me.
What message? I didn't send you any message.
Well, that's funny.
What did the message say?
It said to come to Long Island immediately. But maybe they took the message wrong. I'll ask the servants when I get home.
A dog limps toward them.
Oh, fella. Well, what's wrong with you?
Poor thing's been limping around here for a week.
He feels the leg the dog favors.
Well, Pete, you have a bad shoulder there.
You found out quick enough.
I just happened to hit the sore spot.
Looks to me like you were asking questions with your fingers, the way doctors do.
Well, what's wrong with doctors, Nora?
What's right with them? Nora. They stood by and let your mother die right before your eyes, didn't they? Nora, please.
Nancy holds her head.
I'm sorry, darling.
She slumps into a chair.
What's the matter, Nancy?
It's one of those headaches again.
Headaches? Well, how long have you been having headaches?
I don't know. For months. Nancy, are you going to keep on tearing yourself apart with these headaches? Oh, once and for all, are you going to see him? I don't know.
Him? Who's him, Nora? A doctor?
No, he's too good to be a doctor. He cures people instead of letting them die.
Friend of yours, Nora?
Mr. Archley's a friend of everybody who believes in him. Nancy, you must see him now, today. When the blindness comes, even he can't help you. Nora, don't!
Nancy, why not do as Nora says?
Oh, what's the use? Nobody can help me.
Oh, please, Nancy, I'll go with you. Just come and talk to him. Well, I don't know who the man is or what he can do, but every day miracles happen that no one can explain.
She raises her head. So, some more clues are starting to fall into place for Jimmy. Who is this mysterious man they're taking Nancy to see? What's really wrong with her? And will Jimmy's betrayal of Dr. Gillespie save his life, or lose him forever, or both? Oh, and what about Jimmy's dad? A lot of questions to answer in the conclusion of The Secret of Dr. Kildare, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. Also, check out the Movies for the Blind page on Facebook with exclusive previews and video clips. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. And the movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.